It starts with
love. Yes!
I don't know why. No matter how hard you try.
Oh, it is.
Keep that in mind.
It is. The Alex Dono Show here on QAM. How do I follow up that marathon from Hockman and Crowder? What do they have, a 47-minute radio show?
Too long.
Crowder is so bitter about having to drive 40 minutes here to do a 47-minute radio show. He's not a part-timer. He's not getting paid by the hour. He makes the same amount of money. So all I see, Tito, was he had to work 3 hours and 13 minutes less than he normally does. Paycheck stays the same. Why would I complain about that?
And he's the guy that complains about people not wanting to work, right?
Right.
Imagine that.
I mean, you know me. A lot of times, very often, my radio shows get cut short for other things. It's happening tonight. I've got a two-hour show tonight because we have Thursday Night Football on this radio station. I've done half-hour shows before. I've done one-hour shows. You'll never hear me complain because I get paid the same to do less work. So there you go. And listen, you guys can get paid, potentially, because it's time for your chance to win $1,000. It's the 560 WQAM $1,000 Touchdown Contest, your chance to take home $1,000. Text the word LEMON to 72881, and you are registered. Text LEMON, L-E-M-O-N, to 72881 now. If you don't win this time, your next chance is tomorrow morning at 7 with Joe and Zach. WQAM's $1,000 Touchdown Contest is brought to you by Gunther Mazda, where they never sell you lemons. Get to know the all-new premium Mazda lineup at Gunther Mazda today. This is a national contest. Message and data rates may apply. Do not text and drive. So the code word is lemon. So I'm with you until 8 o'clock tonight. 7 o'clock, we'll talk some Canes with our good buddy Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post. Yeah, I think it's been a couple of weeks since I had Tom on the program. Last time I had Tom on, Hurricanes football felt very different. That was before the Virginia game. That was coming off the, you know, the dramatic victory over Florida State. You know, in hindsight, maybe we should have been more concerned about the way they played against Florida State. But to be a victory in that rivalry, no matter how bad Florida State is, whether the game is played in Miami Gardens or in Tallahassee or Tallahassee Gardens, I will take any win in that series against Florida State. So the last time we talked to Tom on this show, I believe, was right after the Florida State victory, before the Virginia loss, before the Boston College debacle. So, man, the state of the program has changed a ton. On these Miami Dolphins, we're going to get to in a minute some unbelievable audio from Adam Gase, who gets grumpier and grumpier week after week. Now, I think about some of the recent coaches we've had in Davie, some of the recent Miami Dolphins coaches we had, and to put this in the simplest of terms, because yeah, I've covered every one of these coaches since 2007. So if I can put it in the simplest of terms, my word association game, as to why recent coaches in Miami have failed, I will do that for you now. Going back to Cam Cameron. Cam Cameron lasted 1 year, 2007. Why did Cam Cameron fail? I can put that one in one word: incompetence. Completely in over his head, Cam Cameron. Didn't know how to organize, didn't know how to stay on top of his players. At times, he didn't even know who was calling the plays in a game, couldn't answer those questions. Like, Cam Cameron, incompetence is why that guy failed. Then you bring in Tony Sperano, who I think Tony Sperano, to me, was a really good position coach who just couldn't cut it as a head coach. I would love to have, and obviously he's no longer with us, may he rest in peace. I think anybody would have loved to have had Tony Sperano as an offensive line coach, but as a head coach, he wasn't cut out for that, right? And we've seen plenty of individuals who are cut out to be coordinators or position coaches, but just don't have whatever it factor, whatever organizational factor, big picture factor is required to be a head coach. I think that's why Sperano failed. Joe Philbin, wishy-washy, maybe too nice for that job. With Joe Philbin, like, you know, and listen, I know that that the era we're living in right now is the era of more players-oriented coaches, player coaches, right? You don't get as many Bill Parcells or Tom Coughlin types as you used to. You usually have player coaches out there now. It's just kind of the way that society has been trending in. But like Joe Philbin, it was way too nice, I think. I think there's a certain amount of ruthlessness that's required to do that job. And Joe Philbin did none of that. Joe Philbin was probably too polite, too wishy-washy, and, you know, certainly not to the Cam Cameron level. But I felt like there was some incompetence there as well. What do you think about these so far, Tito?
I was going to say with Philbin, I felt like the perfect description would be like lukewarm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough with Joe Philbin. Like, he would make like a great uncle, but just not a great head coach, Philbin.
My favorite thing was the whole thing on Hard Knocks with him was how he spent a significant portion of practice picking up things from the field.
Yeah, like picking up
significant.
Picking up trash in practice was the way he spent his time. But all this to say, because this leads me to Adam Gase, right? You know, Gase has not been fired. We don't know when it's going to happen. It seems like a matter of when, not if, though, for Adam Gase. Whether it happens at the end of this season, the end of next season, we've reached a dark point in the Adam Gase era coaching these Miami Dolphins. So far, if you ask me, word association with Adam Gase, why is he not succeeding right now as Miami Dolphins head coach? I can give you two words on that. Ryan Tannehill. The fact that Adam Gase has hitched his wagon completely to Ryan Tannehill. Not only does he have nothing bad to say about Tannehill, will go out of his way to talk about how Tannehill hasn't even hit his potential. He's still getting so much better. Meanwhile, so Tannehill's still getting so much better. That's fantastic. But why can't he actually play for my football team? He's always hurt. And maybe by the time he next steps on the field, he'll be 31 years old. If he doesn't play till next year, he may end up taking a starting job back this season. But how can you talk about an ascending player at 30 years old who now has had a run of whether it be bad luck, bad fortune with injuries, but yet Adam Gase goes out of his way to hitch his wagon as a head coach to Ryan Tannehill. He is sinking or swimming with Ryan Tannehill. At this point, he's sinking. So this, this audio has gone positively viral today from Adam Gase. So Adam Gase had just said a bunch of really nice things about Tannehill, how difficult Tannehill is for opposing defenses to defend because he can do so many things, how complicated Tannehill is to prepare for. So Armando Salguero asks him, I think, a pretty fair question and gets this response.
So why wasn't it better when he wasn't hurt?
It was. I mean, the first three games, we played pretty good. I mean, we had...
And the next two?
We had... Yeah, I mean, that happens. I mean, that happens sometimes in the NFL. Like, quarterbacks get... We play New England. That's not easy. There's a reason why they win a lot of games every year.
No, but I'm not saying you won. I'm saying, why wasn't he better
the first three games
than what he was previously? He was the same guy
the first three games. He played pretty good.
He was the same guy.
I mean, you're asking me that question, you don't even know what you're talking about. So it's hard for me to defend anything when you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, you don't. I watch the film. I sit there. We evaluate the scheme we're asking him to do, and he does a good job on it.
I know what results are. And I know
that's fine.
Results...
That's how you look at things. You look at everything's results to you. Like, we're going through a process because that's what it is. That's what the season is. It's about trying to get guys to trend upward. And we were heading in the right direction. We hit a speed bump with New England. And then Cincinnati, he's playing well. And then we lose our left tackle and we make two bad decisions.
So I'm telling you, Adam Gase has put all of his eggs in the Ryan Tannehill basket. And okay. Tito, it's probably fair to say that members of the media who criticize Ryan Tannehill certainly are not coming from a position of knowledge in terms that, yeah, most of us, A, are not football experts in the point where I haven't played the game anywhere close to the pro level or the college level. I don't spend time necessarily breaking down film from an academic standpoint. I watch all the games. Sometimes I'll rewatch the games if I feel like there are certain things I need to look at. But no, I don't do film breakdowns. I'm not an expert on that. I can't always tell you what the exact play call was, who was out of position, what went wrong on every single play. And yeah, most members of the media are in the same boat, right? I mean, maybe even a guy like Channing Crowder, who played the game at the pro level, isn't necessarily doing breakdown film sessions the way Adam Gase is. So yeah, that point, the media doesn't come from that area of expertise. But why is Adam Gase always defending Ryan Tannehill as if this guy's 23, 24 years old? Right? I mean, at this point at 30, I get it. I talked about how many head coaches we've had in recent years. Tannehill has played now for, if you include Dan Campbell, three different head coaches, multiple different offensive coordinators, different quarterback coaches. He's been hurt, which at this point is becoming injury prone. So I think that's a point against him. So you're still telling me he's still ascending to new heights, this Ryan Tannehill? No, I'm telling you, we have a really good idea at this point who Tannehill is. Let me get one more from Adam Gase. This is Adam Gase explaining why he still believes in Ryan Tannehill. Maybe. That's number six. Feel like I should kill time until we get it. Texter writes in, everything is about results. All right, here's Adam Gase on Tannehill.
We've made a lot of strides since we started in 2016. I mean, he had some good seasons before I got here. I know that. And we did some different stuff that year. We leaned on the running game and worked off the play action stuff. He does a great job with the zone read stuff. When you have an athletic guy that can move around as much as he can, and then his arm strength has been something that I've never been around before, where we hit like the pass we hit against Tennessee, where he throws it, you know, 50 plus yards in the air and the guy never breaks stride. You know, I mean, he has some rare qualities that you can't find in a lot of guys, you know, physically. And the more that he keeps playing, he keeps learning game to game. And that's something to me that puts him in a position to where's our ceiling at? I don't think we're close to it. I think we just keep getting better, keep finding ways to maximize all his skill set, because it becomes a problem for the defense. It's hard to defend him when you don't know what he's going to do. Is he going to be zone read? Is he going to sprint out? Is he going to run a naked? Is he going to go play action? Is it drop back? Are we running the ball? There's a lot of things they got to defend.
So this is some good news. I think this may be happening because he's listening right now. So I'd mentioned the guests we're going to have tonight. Locked in, 7 o'clock. Tom DeAngelo is going to talk Canes football with us. Coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes, Ira Winterman's going to talk Heat with us. Heat have not given me too many reasons to be happy, at least not over these last couple of games. Defense, brutal. But at 6:40, Tito, at 6:40, Omar Kelly wants to join, talk about this quarterback stuff. So why the hell not? Let's make it happen tonight.
Got an action-packed show.
Action-packed show. Oh, I cannot wait to get Omar's take. Omar was in that room. In fact, right after the awkward exchange that Gase had with Salguero, Omar said, he was like, Adam, by the way, if it's okay, I'd like to ask you a question not about Tannehill. And then he asked him a Devontae Parker question, which was also an important thing to get to. So Omar Kelly is going to join us at 6:40, but Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel will hop aboard next. We'll talk Heat with Ira here on QAM.
Radio.com.
Back here on the Alex Dono Show, we're loading it up, even though we're only on till 8 tonight. We go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. We bring in our good friend, Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Ira is powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. So, Ira, as soon as I mentioned last segment you were coming on, people are already fired up on the text line about Wayne Ellington. So, Ira, I'm led to believe he's been healthy enough to play for about the last three games. He's not in the rotation yet. What is the delay on Wayne Ellington?
Well, as Adam Gase would say, you don't know what you're talking about, Alex. You haven't been in the practices. You haven't been around the team. So clearly, to even have to answer this question, you don't know what you've seen or what you've heard. Or I could just say this way. Honestly, I don't know. You know, I think it's almost like in your previous segment when Coach Gase was talking about his thoughts on Ryan Tannehill. Eric Spoelstra coaches the way he wants to coach. And because we're all sort of, you know, closet coaches here, you know, and doing it on social media, I just don't think he felt comfortable in those games needing a defensive component also to throw Wayne out there. That he felt, hey, I've gotten all the points I need all season, at least for Miami Heat basketball, but it's both ends of the court. That's what matters. I don't know if I agree with that, but I know Eric's history has been this. With the exception of last year, when he's had sort of one-dimensional shooters, I go mostly back to James Jones, He really never played him a lot. He wants his players to be sort of more holistic type of players. I think he believes he gets more out of that than Tyler Johnson. I think as the game continues with the three for all we've seen this year and with the offensive for all we've seen,
yep.
I think he's coming around. I think by Saturday in Atlanta, the Heat's next game, you will see Wayne Ellington. I think it's hard for old school Heat and the way they've coached and set up their franchise to realize the NBA is not letting you play defense anyway. And if you're a lockdown defender, you can't.
And I want to stay on that note, Ira. You've written about this. Fans are talking about it. The pace of play in the NBA is way up. Right now, the Heat's defense doesn't seem anywhere close to adapted to this. How can this get fixed, and is it a quick fix?
Eric Spoelstra has been very good about adjusting. I think people look at Eric Spoelstra as stubborn. Eric Spoelstra is stubborn in that he knows he has an 82-game season to fix this, unlike Adam Gase, where he has his 16 games and that's it. So I think Eric is a little bit more patient than fans want, because fans want everything changed yesterday, because fans want an undefeated record through 7-8 games of the season. That's what fans want. I respect that. So I think Eric is looking at other possibilities. I think he's looking at his options. He's waiting for James Johnson to return. He has a little bit, he has more pieces back now. One, they're trickling in one by one. So I think Eric will change. I think he will have to. I think he's trying to play a pace and a style that doesn't necessarily suit his roster as he adjusts to the NBA. And to me, a bigger question than even Wayne Ellington is Hassan Whiteside, who's played very well rebounding-wise,
right,
very well blocking shots. And the one thing you almost always hear coaches say is this: if you do something on one end, you'll be rewarded on the other end. Get a big rebound, you get the shot. Get a big block shot, you get the shot. But you know what, Alex? 2 points don't equal 3 points. And the NBA math, to me, is maddening. It's out of control. It's all about three-pointers, as if they're the only guys who matter. So I think Eric will adjust to that degree also. But here's the problem. You have a roster with three centers. Yeah. And Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk, not as much as the other two, and Hassan Whiteside are all at their best at the rim. So I think it's going to be some sort of in-season adjustments that will be required.
Ira, you know, of course, I have to bring this up every time I talk to you until he's either traded somewhere else or he comes out and says, no, I'm happy to stay in Minnesota. But on the Jimmy Butler front, now I understand it sounds like the talks have maybe reopened on the Miami mm-hmm. Heat side with Minnesota. Is there anything new on that? And do you feel like this is something that Heat fans can be optimistic might actually get done?
Well, Glenn Taylor, the owner, was on a podcast today in Minnesota and had a chance to listen to it driving back from practice. And he basically said, we have to trade Jimmy Butler. He does not want to be here, and I do not want an employee who doesn't want to be here. It's not good for the rest of his teammates. It's not good for our organization. I think that deal will be made within 2 weeks, maybe at the most. I think certainly by Thanksgiving. I think the Heat are certainly in it. And I think the question comes down to this, is I understand Pat Riley drew a line in the sand because he saw distressed property. He is great at getting distressed property. Alonzo Mourning, Shaquille O'Neal, you go down the list of all the guys, Tim Hardaway, over the years that he's gotten. I think right now all the bidders have to realize this is not a distressed property sale, that the Timberwolves are staying afloat enough as it is, that you have to give your straight-up kind of offer where both teams, when the trade is made, can say, okay, this is equivalent value. So is equivalent value Josh Richardson, Kelly Olynyk, and a protected first-round pick, or does it have to be a little bit more? I think it has to be a little bit more right now. And where the Heat are, it's just sort of the same old, and nothing is changing. I think you add a little bit more. I remember Big O when the Shaquille O'Neal trade was made. I would not include Caron Butler. You
wow.
can have Brian Grant.
How do you remember that, by the way? That was what, like over a decade ago? How do you still, 13 years ago?
I go to bed every night listening to old Big O podcasts. They put me right to sleep. Don't tell
I don't even
I
think we
that.
Had podcasts back then. That was like 03 when that
no,
happened.
Oh, would deliver the cassette to the door. So yeah. I put it in my 8-track player, and I go to sleep. My point being, O said no, and then they put Caron Butler in the deal. So it was Caron and Brian Grant, Lamar Odom had a first-round pick, and some people here are saying it's too much. It worked out fine for both teams. I think that's what's going to happen here, is what other asset, what other thing can the Heat do? Does it mean taking on Georgie Dang's contract also? Does it mean doing a little bit more? Pat Riley has this expression of sometimes you pay a nickel more for something you really want. I think the Heat are in nickel more territory, so I don't know what it is. And Heat fans can think about this, that if the offer, at least what we've heard, the offer out there being Josh Richardson, Kelly Olynyk, some sort of first-round pick, possibly protected, would you give another nickel? Would you give another Bam Adebayo? Would you give another little piece out of your trove? Then I think it gets made. Then I think the Heat could make it.
You were asked an interesting question in a recent Ask Ira. I'm not sure if it was today or yesterday, but just as kind of a general rule, Ira, your experience, you've been covering this league and this team for a long time. When players are brought up in trade rumors and trade talks and the media insists, hey, these guys are being floated as trade possibilities, do you think that can, like, how often does that get in their head and affect the way that they play when a guy like Kelly Olynyk is mentioned in every trade rumor, Josh Richardson thrown out there as well? How much can it affect these guys, whether they admit it or not?
I think there's a short-term effect in the next 12 to 24, maybe 36 hours where it's like, whoa, where did that come from? I thought, you know, it's pretty stable here. I just bought a new house. So I could understand that. I think after that, because of social media, it becomes deafening. And they realize everyone's name is being mentioned. And it's constant. And nothing has still happened. And then I think they settle right back into their lives. So I think for Josh Richardson, business as usual. For Goran Dragic and Kelly Olynyk and anyone else mentioned, business as usual. Because it has to be, because the NBA season doesn't wait for anyone. And you're getting on that plane to Atlanta tomorrow. And then you're going to Detroit the game after. And then you're coming back and playing a game against San Antonio. So you can't let it get in the way. I do not believe for a second that, except maybe for one game in the moment, it affects a player. Then I think you move on. I think the Heat are also great at this. It is a circus in Minnesota. And Tom Thibodeau can say all he wants about how Jimmy Butler doesn't feel good and it's general soreness and he's going to go with us on our West Coast trip. You can say it all you want. It's become a daily occurrence there. That hasn't been the case with the Heat. I do not think at this moment, for this game, for the last game they played, for the next game they played, that the Jimmy Butler talk and the trade rumors have anything to do with sort of the Heat malaise. The Heat are what they are. They are a team stuck in the middle.
Yep.
They have a 500 roster, playing one game right now under, but playing 500 ball. They are who you think they are, which is why they really need to do something to shake it up. Which is sort of like all the Tannehill talk today also, is that if people think it's just the same old, and it's not going to change, people after a while go, hey, I've seen this rodeo, I've seen this show before, give me something else.
What do you make of that, by the way, Ira? I know you were listening to the first segment.
Sure.
You heard the Adam Gase clips on Tannehill. You know, hearing Gase defend Tannehill the way he does, and in my opinion, I think Gase has gone, you know, the last 3 years, maybe a little bit too far, hitching himself to the Tannehill wagon. What do you make of what's kind of evolving into Tannehill Gate, as we said?
Well, it's actually interesting because not only did I listen to the previous segment, but I'm looking forward to the next one with Omar Kelly from the Sun Sentinel to hear his thoughts. Because you know what? I know Hockman spoke about it early in his abbreviated show, and I expect a refund from Hockman because of that. But my thought on this is, I think Adam Gase was fine with what he said. I think you can stand by your man if you choose to stand by your man. So for Armando to say that Ryan wasn't any better in the first three games, I got a different vibe. I felt as an outsider. But again, the one thing I will say in all of this, and Eric Spoelstra has said it many times to me when I've suggested someone should or should not play, I don't see every practice. I don't see the development. I don't see how he reads defenses. I don't see him in the film room, how he's breaking down. Now, if this was Adam Gase's first season and he's saying there's growth and you're saying, wait a minute, how would you know? That's one thing. But after he spent a couple of seasons with someone, he knows if there is growth there. So then you look at number two, the injury right now. Is it a chronic injury and continuing the pattern of not being available? Then I'm out of patience. If this is a one-off, and Adam spoke about this earlier in the week about how he feels a lot of these injuries are just sort of freak injuries, that it's not something he can go to the training staff or the equipment staff and talk about, then these things happen. I don't like challenging coaches' decisions for this reason when I ask my line of questioning. I know what they're going to say.
Ira Winterman does a great job covering the Miami Heat, but he is the most well-rounded man in sports media down here. He can talk Dolphins. He can talk John Bones Jones. He can talk Panthers. And real quick, Ira,
sure.
What's going on with these Panthers?
You know what? You take stupid penalties. You create 5-on-3s. You give up bad goals when you don't have your confidence. This is what happens. It's been a brutal travel schedule. I mean, they had a 3-game New York trip. I know they stayed in Lower Manhattan for the games against the Islanders and the Rangers and the Devils. So I think the travel has something to do with it also, but they're not playing real smart at times. They're making boneheaded plays. They have better talent than they are showing right now. Whether that's a coaching issue or not, I think it's something you have to look at. This team is more talented than they're playing. I know Luongo's out. The goaltending is not necessarily stout, but that those defensemen should be better. They should be playing better. They have the firepower right now. This is, I think, when you look at a team and you say, yeah, something seems to be wrong. The one thing I'll say about the Panthers, which I didn't say about the Heat, is it gets late really quick for the Panthers every year.
Yep.
Yes, 2 years ago the Heat had the terrible start and they fought back and came up short. Last year, Panthers' bad start came back within one game, the last game of the season, the night before they were eliminated. But it happens too often with the Panthers. The Heat, it happened once. The Panthers, it seems like every year, for what, Dono? The last 5-6 years, yeah. We're talking in December. Wow, that terrible start's going to come back to bite them. When they get back from Finland, they have to make hay, or else, you know what? Someone has to be on the clock, because I've seen this movie before and it never ends well.
Love it. He's Ira Winterman, powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Ira, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your night, sir.
And don't go easy on Omar. I'll be listening.
Oh, I won't. I cannot. Okay, here's my prediction. Omar Kelly's going to join us in the upcoming segment. I know he wants to talk about Tannehill. He wants to talk about what Gase had to say about Tannehill. I think Omar is going to defend Tannehill and maybe even defend Gase. There's a bloodlust in this town to get rid of Tannehill, make way for a young quarterback that we can grow with. I am part of that movement. I wouldn't be so against Tannehill at this point if not for the fact that he's 30 and he's broken, physically broken, whether it's a knee, it's a shoulder now, right? I think that on the field, Tannehill probably been a little bit underrated over the last 7 years, a little bit underrated on the field. But to me, you get to be 30 years old and we're still where we're at, stuck in quicksand. I got to see what else we can do. I've got to see who's next in that pipeline. And what angers me is, you refuse to draft quarterbacks year after year. No, no, no. This is our guy. I'm Adam Gase. I'm a quarterback whisperer. I can make Ryan Tannehill into Peyton Manning. Just watch. I've been watching for 2.5 years, and all that I see right now is Brock Osweiler heading into Brock's giving season. Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel is going to join us next.
Radio.com. Radio.
Now, I haven't actually spoken to Omar today, like, you know, man to man. We've only spoken via text, which is kind of the way most people communicate these days anyway. But still, okay, I can just kind of sense, based on his tweets, that Omar's a little fired up today. Omar, is that safe to say you're a little fired up today?
I'm not fired up. I just got a lot to say, and I really listened to your show, and I know we usually do Fridays, but today is a good day to sort of add some perspective or context to what you saw today.
Yeah, it's okay. So let's, you know what? Why don't we set the table for people, Omar, by playing that clip again? Tito, can you get me? Can you get me the Adam Gase clip where he gets in a little bit with Armando Salguero on Ryan Tannehill? This has sparked a lot of social media conversation today.
So why wasn't it better when he wasn't hurt?
It was. I mean, the first three games, we played pretty good. I mean,
the next two?
We had, yeah. I mean, that happens. I mean, that happens sometimes in the NFL. Like, quarterbacks we play New England. That's not easy. There's a reason why they win a lot of games every year.
No, but I'm not saying you won. I'm saying, why wasn't he better
the first three games
than what he was previously? He was the same guy.
The first three games, he played pretty good. I mean, you're asking me that question, you don't even know what you're talking about, so it's hard for me to defend anything when you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, you don't. I watch the film. I sit there. We evaluate the scheme we're asking him to do, and he does a good job on it.
I know what results are.
And I know that
that's fine. That's how you look at things. You look at everything's results to you. Like, we're going through a process because that's what it is. That's what the season is. It's about trying to get guys to trend upward. And we were heading in the right direction. We hit a speed bump with New England. And then Cincinnati, he's playing well. And then we lose our left tackle and we make two bad decisions.
All right. So, Omar, what am I not seeing and what are a lot of Dolphin fans not seeing with Ryan Tannehill when we hear Adam Gase speak glowingly about him as he did today?
But before we begin this conversation, you will acknowledge that I sit right behind Big O in this world as Ryan Tannehill critics. And we're not talking about the people who showed up in 2016 or 2017 or 2018 to criticize Ryan Tannehill.
You're an OG. You've been there since day one.
I've been there since day one, 2012. So, and I don't own the number one spot, but I'm right there, number two or number three. Now, with that on the record, what in Adam Gase's diatribe, what did he say today that was not factually accurate or debatable?
I don't know. For me, it's more of a big picture thing. As far as just picking it point by point, I'm not going to argue with his own evaluation of the way Tannehill runs his offense. The greater point that I take issue with as a Dolphins fan, Omar, is that year after year, the insistence on putting all of your eggs in the Tannehill basket. We don't need to draft anybody. We don't need an option B. We don't need competition
We're not arguing that because I've said that every single year since 2012. Like, why are you obsessed with not giving Tannehill competition? Why is it that everybody on that team has to fight and battle and compete for their job, but Tannehill doesn't?
Right.
And the same thing with Chad Haney. I said the same thing then, too.
Yeah.
So that's besides that point. That's another issue there. But everything that Adam Gase said today, Tannehill, I believe he had 300 passer rating games in the first three games of the season. Then he played the Patriots, which you know they exposed Miami's defense, showing you that, hey, if you run inside zone against this team, they can't stop it. They'll eventually break. And everybody has built on that and created a blueprint that's led to them struggling. But last I checked, when Tannehill was a starter of the Miami Dolphins, they were 3-2, and then they went on to win 4-2 with Brock Osweiler. And people watch Brock Osweiler play in this offense, and they're like, oh, great, wow, gee, look, he's getting the job done in producing the offense, and it looks fairly efficient, just like Ryan Tannehill did. But why do we need Tannehill?
Yeah.
And that's created some sort of unhealthy conversation, because the last time people saw Ryan Tannehill, he got his chest blown out by the Bengals because they didn't have a left tackle, fell on his arm, impacting his throwing shoulder, and we haven't seen him since. Now, we're not entering a conversation about health because that's the unknown, and we shouldn't be having a conversation about age because history has shown us quarterbacks play till they're 40 now. So Tannehill's got another 10 years left.
Yeah, but, he's still 6, 7, 8 years older than a lot of the ascending quarterbacks out there. That still, it makes a difference to me.
Yeah, but then I'm not going to defend that because he's a young quarterback still, even though, hell, he's been here since 2012 as a starter. But truth be told, come on, let's not act like this guy's been playing quarterback his whole life. But you knew that when you drafted him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we sit here and we say that Tannehill's upside isn't as high as some other quarterback's upside, or Tannehill's productivity isn't where it needs to be at this stage in his career, or Tannehill can't sell hope? Because really, this is what the conversation's all about. This is why fans and the media have turned on Tannehill, because their argument is, oh man, they've been selling hope to us for the last 6 years. They can't sell hope to us anymore. We need a young quarterback. So you need a Sam Darnold. He's got a 75 quarterback rating, 11 interceptions, completing 57% of his passes. He's looks like trash. And they'll say, oh, well, that's now. He'll get better. Or that's the talent around him and his offensive line, his wide receivers. He'll get better. Oh, that's, he needs a tight end. He'll get better. Like they did with Tannehill, they'll make the same excuses there. All of the young quarterbacks are playing horribly. All the three that you wanted to draft in the first round, if the Dolphins were lucky enough,
They're playing horribly. Now, this is year one, so I understand there's going to be growth and development and progression.
Well, and to that point, I think a lot of Dolphin fans would rather have a young quarterback playing horribly than a 30-year-old quarterback playing mediocre ball.
Correct. Well, he wasn't, and that's the thing. He wasn't playing mediocre ball when he was healthy.
Well, that's probably
now,
fair.
Cincinnati, yeah, it looked bad at the end. But in the Cincinnati game, and I hate sitting here defending Ryan Tannehill.
I love that we've made you do this today. I love it.
But in the Cincinnati game, if you look at it, he had no protection. He was at a desperate point in the game where he was trying to make something happen. If he had thrown a check down on a third and nine play, like the one where he allowed a sack or the interception on his head, everybody would be like, oh, look at him. He's not even trying. You know, his interception was a desperate third down play, and then the two fumbles were like bad third and whatever evers with no protection from the line. Yeah, he looked like trash. Very few quarterbacks, and I'm talking in one hand, I could probably count them, would have succeeded in those situations. Now, did you expect him to succeed in the situation? He's Ryan Tannehill. What the hell are you expecting from him? You know who he is right now. He's an average quarterback who still has a little bit of upside because, in my mind, you haven't seen him with his full array of weapons. He didn't have a tight end to begin the season. Now they finally got one in Nick O'Leary. And he's never played – he's played one game with Devontae Parker this whole season. One game. So how are you and then one of the games that he played, you know, the offensive line has been in an evolution because of injuries the whole season. And I hate to sit here and say – to Dolphin fans, who I've sat and criticized Tannehill for since 2012, but you're not done with the evaluation. I'm sorry, you're not done.
What if I were to ask you though, and I get it that, and I can remember thinking about this, a few weeks ago when this shoulder injury emerged for Tannehill, thinking, okay, this is another year where you're going to say, well, we're not done with the evaluation because, because the team is injured around him. His season gets, cut short by injury, whether he comes back or not. He's missing games with injury. So this is just going to extend that clock another year. But
no extending of the clock.
Okay, so how would you approach this long term? Because you've got to have a plan B behind Tannehill finally, right?
The plan B should have been 3-4 years.
It should have been, exactly. But unfortunately, that plan B, that safety net was never set. So now what do we do this offseason?
And that's my magic question to the Big O's of the world and everybody else. It's like, okay, what is your plan? What is your alternative? You just don't want this guy. Okay, so do you want Teddy Bridgewater? Do you want Eli Manning? Is it Brian Braun? The Jacksonville quarterback. How about Nick Foles? Does that wet your whistle? Are you trading two first round picks for Derek Carr? Are you going to go draft these young quarterbacks and give up three first rounders for the guy at Oregon? What is your plan? Like, you sit here and you want to act like quarterbacks just fall out the sky. I've covered this team for 11 years, and last year there were options out there at quarterback. They chose not to get any.
Right.
But would you rather give Kirk Cousins $87 million over 3 years? Would that solve your problem?
No, but to me, I would like – if the Dolphins end up in this now familiar draft position being somewhere the 9 to 12 range, and then I think instead of acting like you don't need a quarterback in the first round, you give it a serious look.
Oh, no. You have to – right now, especially with the shoulder injury, and you could say whatever you want as an organization, I'm sorry, but now Ryan has shoulder injuries. Injuries never get better.
Yeah.
They never get better. They progressively become non-issues, but they never get better. At some point, again, we will have another shoulder injury with Ryan. So you better get yourself a backup. You better get yourself a contingency plan. That's my biggest gripe and biggest beef, and which explains where this organization has been for the last decade. In counting Chad Henne, you never want your quarterback to compete. And that is a loser's mentality. That's why you've been a losing organization.
And I think by and large we agree on this, Omar, because I'm not saying that there's a veteran you could have traded for last week who fixes this thing, or there's a veteran free agency you pick up in a few months who fixes this thing. I want to start this from the ground up with a rookie, and that's something they should have been doing already.
Yeah, and you want the rookie to start and play?
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, either Tannehill is back next year, or maybe you do that thing people are talking about where you cut Tannehill loose and you keep Brock Osweiler another year for cheap, and he becomes the bridge.
I'm sorry. That's not an option. Brock Osweiler is not a bridge quarterback. If you watch the film, you'll see how many plays. If you really watch the film, and you know I do,
yeah, you
see how many plays he misses per game. He misses about 10 plays per game. And the passes, even if they're completions, they're not good. Accuracy has been his issue his entire career, and it's not fixable. So you're wasting your time right now with Brock Osweiler. He's just holding it down. When you see this team run a draw play on 3rd and 8, that's not because that's the best play, that's the option. That's because we don't want our quarterback to make a big boy throw, because we know bad things can happen if he's forced to make a big boy throw. That, with all due respect to Brock, thanks for your services and what you're doing. He's not an NFL starting quarterback. He's not even a bridge quarterback.
Yeah, I think
who says that he is loses all credibility to me, because you don't know. As Adam Gay said, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, what do you think, by the way, of it seems like Gase gets a little bit grumpier week after week, and you're there at every media session, Omar. What do you make of all that?
I disagree. I don't think I'm there every week. I don't think he's getting grumpy. I think you learn who people are through adversity. But today didn't even show adversity, because he's still dialed in. He's still focused. What people don't realize is the Dolphins' season is still alive. They win against the Jets on Sunday. They're right back. They're right in the playoff hunt. They're right in the playoff hunt for a wild card. Unfortunately, most people will look at it and say, well, we're making the playoffs. That's no big deal. We're not contenders. Have you ever been contenders in the last decade?
No.
Okay, so let's not lie to yourself. The Dolphins are 4-4. They're on pace for a 500 season. That's 8-8. Did you expect the Dolphins to do better than 8-8 this season?
I certainly didn't.
Okay, so let's not live in delusional land. Like, that's what I don't understand about people. You saw this talent base. You saw this team. You knew they are paper thin. Okay, they start to get some injuries. They lose their starting quarterback. What did you expect? You expect 11-5? What miracle did you think was going to happen?
I got to let you run on that note, Omar. And I really appreciate being able to do this on a Thursday today, given all that's come up between the fan base and Gase's comments today. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
I love it. Omar Kelly. You can follow him on Twitter at Omar Kelly. Check out his work in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. So we're going to go from very, very cheery Dolphins talk to equally cheery Canes talk. I do think the Canes beat Duke on Saturday. I've already gotten a couple of texts saying that they're going to lose this game.
They better.
they better win Saturday. Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post joins us next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.